It's Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tyke. It's great to have you listening today on this cloudy and foggy Friday morning. Allies and opponents of Governor Scott Walker today are trying to make sense of the hundreds of pages of documents released Thursday in the John Doe investigation. In the documents, which were released by a court order, the details of the prosecution's case were made public, a case that Governor Walker and two associates were at the center of an alleged effort to evade campaign finance laws during the 2012 recall elections. The case involves not just Wisconsin names, but national names such as Karl Rove as well. No charges have been filed in the investigation, and since the release of the documents, Governor Walker has pointed to the ruling by a federal judge that put at least a temporary halt to the investigation. Dan Bice has done some investigating himself as a columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He broke the original news that the John Doe investigation was underway and has covered it extensively since then, and he joins us this morning by phone. Nice to talk to you again.
Thanks. Always good to be with you.
Let me ask a basic question first. Why were these documents ordered to be released in the first place?
There were some media groups that were asking for them to be released. It was a little bit unusual because the civil complaint was filed and it was heavily redacted, and a number of the responses were completely redacted. So we were trying to cover a dispute without knowing everything that was being said.
Well, and this is the court system ostensibly agreed that there was some value in making public what is supposed to be by its nature a private investigation?
Yeah, I mean, that's the unusual thing. The not-so-private John Doe investigation, which now everybody knows about. You know, this was significant for a couple of reasons. The main one is the prosecutors have been largely silent for the 2 years that this has been going on. And in unsealing the documents, the prosecutor showed what they thought, what their case is all about. We also got to see in its entirety what the targets are saying is wrong with the investigation. So most of the cards have been laid on the table. There's still some stuff that was still under seal. And, of course, not everything that they've gathered is being made public. But the outline of the case that the prosecutors were trying to make is out there now, and the defense is out there now.
So is it fair to describe these, 200 pages of documents as basically a snapshot of where the investigation was when it was suspended?
It is a snapshot. I think of it more as an outline of what they were hoping to do, because you have to go into court and tell a judge that you think a crime has been committed. You have to say what the crime is and the reasoning for it. And that's what one of the major filings was yesterday. It was Fran Schmitz, the special prosecutor, saying this is the crime that we thought was committed, and these are the reasons for that. The interesting thing is there have been two presiding judges in the John Doe. The first judge listened to those arguments, said that they sounded valid, and signed off on more than 100 subpoenas and more than a dozen raids on people's homes to gather information. That judge ended up leaving the case, and she was replaced by a second judge. The second judge read the information and thought that there weren't any grounds to continue the case. And so that judge quashed the subpoena. And you'll be hearing from Governor Walker repeatedly emphasizing what that second judge did, not the first judge.
And the outline of that investigation was in this the so-called Exhibit C. Give us a thumbnail sketch. These are complex campaign finance laws that were involved. What was it that prosecutors were trying to prove?
Trying to show that during the recall election, Governor Walker and his campaign, along with his chief strategist, R.J. Johnson, and R.J. is a very major player in Wisconsin politics. Most people don't know who he is, but for the last 25 years, he's been one of the key people in deciding who gets elected here and who doesn't. The argument was that these people worked together to coordinate what money was coming into the state and how it was spent, that there were 12 groups, conservative groups, to which people would make donations and money would be shifted from one place to the other. The prosecutors are making the case that this sort of coordination is illegal under Wisconsin law, and that the reason it's illegal is that people don't know where this money is coming from. If people give money to Wisconsin Club for Growth and it passes it along to another group who passes it along to a third group, by the time the TV ad runs, no one knows the source of those funds. I mean, that's the argument that they're trying to make.
Well, and prosecutors are saying essentially that if one group does something on behalf of another group, they have to be listed as essentially a subcommittee of that other group.
Sure. That's part of it. And, you know, the machinations, the where the money went and how it was distributed and transferred, it was a pretty complex, they call it a scheme. It was a pretty complex system that they used to try to keep people from knowing exactly where the money was coming from.
You mentioned R.J. Johnson. The other person who shows up a lot through this is someone named Deborah Jordahl.
Deborah Jordahl has been R.J.'s top deputy for the last two decades. Where you see R.J., you see Deb, and where you see Deb, you see R.J. They work together for a long time. They run Wisconsin Club for Growth, and R.J. is also the main campaign strategist for Governor Walker. He was with him through the 2010 election and throughout the 2012 the recall election. And if you've read the governor's book, you know that everybody thinks the governor has won the recall election, but it's only when they go in and see RJ and they see that RJ is on the verge of tears, everybody then realizes that he's defeated Tom Barrett.
Well, the other issue that's wrapped up in this seems to hinge on whether so-called issue ads are express political activity or if they even need to be considered express political activity. Is that right?
And that's the pushback on this. The thing is, if these groups, the question is, how independent are these groups? And when they're raising issues and suggesting people think about certain issues, are they working in concert with the campaign or not? And right now, the federal courts are in flux as to how to regulate various ads. Do you have to say vote for Scott Walker for you to be considered an independent group that needs to be regulated or not regulated? Some courts are going a number of different ways. And the Seventh Circuit, which oversees our area, had a pretty major decision in the Right to Life case, trying to loosen the regulations on these third-party groups.
A lot has been made of this email exchange between Governor Walker and Karl Rove. What's the significance of what was in that email?
It just shows that everybody knows that there was this coordination activity going on. Plus, Karl Rove plays a big hand with his group, American Crossroads, in terms of dispersing money and helping out candidates around the country. It also is great to have Karl Rove in any story. it also, you know, it's interesting. Karl Rove has connections in Wisconsin, and clearly he and Governor Walker are on, you know, very good terms. They're discussing how this system is going to work during the election.
Now, Governor Walker is singled out in many of these details, but had prosecutors actually gotten to the point where they were accusing him of coordinating these alleged schemes, or is it mostly R.J. Johnson?
It's Governor Walker is at the center of it, along with R.J. and Deb Jordahl. Those are the three individuals they cite as targets in the investigation. But, you know, the subpoenas were quashed, so there's a lot of material they hadn't gathered. They had done raids on a number of people's homes. And, you know, there's a discussion of the raids in the complaint that's filed by the Eric O'Keefe with Wisconsin Club for Growth.
Right. What did he say about those raids?
Well, it's the first time somebody has said on that side what exactly happened. There were pre-dawn raids. They come in, you know, with big lights and everything and sweep in, take everybody's phones, even the kids' phones and their computers, and the people whose houses are being raided are supposedly told that they can't even talk to their attorneys. So obviously that side is very upset about that, and they've included that. They've included that in their complaint. All of that information had been redacted, and we hadn't seen it. Judge Randa had referred to it in an earlier decision that he handed down, but it doesn't look good. It looks heavy-handed. The prosecutors have said that they didn't do anything unusual in this case, and it is true. Prosecutors in cases tend to, they do raid people's homes. It's just, this is a white-collar case involving election law. So it comes across as certainly heavy-handed.
So this isn't necessarily a legal issue so much as it is a PR issue as much as anything.
I mean, it would be a public relations issue, and it also you know, the targets are saying that this is a partisan investigation meant to shut down Governor Walker and to prevent him from getting reelected, that the investigation was started by a Democrat, John Chisholm, the district attorney for Milwaukee County. And, you know, this adds to their discussion. Look how dramatic and radical and unnecessary these raids were. But, you know, they did this in the first John Doe investigation back in 2010. So that's not, it's not unusual. It's sort of what prosecutors do. But, you know, if you're sitting at home at 6:30 in the morning and a bunch of cops show up and go throughout your house and take your kids' computers, that's not something that you expect.
One can already see the campaign commercials on both sides here.
Sure.
The existence of the investigation itself is still bogged down at court. It's been quashed, but it could potentially pick up again. Even if the investigation is allowed to pick up again, you can't make these documents a secret again. Does it cease to be a John Doe investigation at that point?
I think it's so bizarre what's going on to have a secret investigation. And, you know, also in this thing are allegations about how I got the stories when I broke the fact that there was a John Doe investigation. Everybody's making allegations about what all this material that's supposed to be secret. If the Seventh Circuit would decide that the investigation could go on and that there was no problems here, it would be very bizarre to continue it. But I'm guessing that they would ramp up the investigation and start going again. But you're right. First of all, I highly doubt that the whole thing will be resolved by the fall election, but I'm not sure how they get the investigation going again. But at the same time, you would hate to go through all of these legal fights and end up winning and then say, you know, what the heck, let's end this investigation now. Then it looks like nothing but harassment.
Do we have any idea, you know, given all of what's been released, how much this has cost us?
No, actually, the prosecutors have been very reluctant. I tried to put together some numbers on the first investigation to see how much it cost. You know, it ran 33 months, and there were substantial resources being used. And I was able to see how much the judge in the case was paid, but the DA's office was very, very reluctant to help me with numbers, just in terms of I was trying to find out how much of the time the different prosecutors spent on the case. And they wouldn't even tell me. They wouldn't say if someone spent half their time, a third of their time, a quarter of their time. It was nearly impossible to do. But I think we're right now going back at that and trying to figure out how much both investigations have cost. We do know how much the attorneys cost in this part of the case, the attorneys for the prosecutors. So that's something that's readily available. But the investigation itself, that's a harder thing to figure out in terms of the cost.
So for all the stuff that's been made public, there are still a lot of questions that we don't know the answers to.
Sure, yeah, there's a lot of questions.
Dan Bice, thanks so much.
Sure, thanks for inviting me.
Dan Bice is a columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and is covering the John Doe investigation. He's doing an online chat about it and other issues at noon today on the paper's website.